Hey, this is Mark Rose from Here Lies Man. You're listening to The Vinyl Guide. We're announcing our record Ritual Divination out in January of 2021. Thanks to Nate. Enjoy.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate from The Vinyl Guide, and I'm very proud to be bringing you a world premiere this week. An interview and new track from the upcoming Here Lies Man album, Ritual Divination, which you lucky listeners, will be amongst the first to hear in the world and be able to pre-order the limited vinyl variants on October 27th at RidingEasyRex.com. Now today we'll be talking to Marcos about the new album, his history with Vinyl Records, the songwriting, the themes, the clave, how the records come together, as well as sharing a track from the new album after the interview. This will be a world premiere of the new Here Lies Man track and the kickoff for the first vinyl pressing of Ritual Divination. So, fans of Here Lies Man and Riding Easy Records, this is huge news. And if you haven't had the pleasure of hearing Here Lies Man and aren't familiar with them, well, stick around to hear more or simply dial up any of their prior albums on streaming services. They're often described as Afrobeat meets Black Sabbath, which is a perfect combination for my ears anyway. I'd encourage you to head over to RidingEasyRex.com, grab a copy of the new album, grab any of their previous albums, or just about anything from RidingEasyRex.com. Now, today's episode of The Vinyl Guide is brought to you in part by GrooveWasher.com, the best record cleaner in the visible universe. And that's with the Hubble telescope and everything. I mean, who knows what kind of vinyl cleaning compounds they have on Alpha Centauri, but right here on Earth, when it comes to cleaning records, we all bow towards the GrooveWasher. And guess what? Here's a 10% off discount code. Enter VinylGuide10 at checkout and save on everything at GrooveWasher.com. All hail the victor in the vinyl cleaning wars. That's GrooveWasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And we're also brought to you today by AudiophileUSA.com. When it comes to buying records online, the only website you can trust is AudiophileUSA.com. And that's because they only sell excellent and near mint vinyl records. No judgment, no VG plus minus GPG hooey. Just the best, the cleanest, the tip-top final upgrade on vinyl, and they ship worldwide. With over 42,000 titles in stock, there's something for everyone at AudiophileUSA.com. That's AudiophileUSA.com, home of your holy grail. And lastly, if you enjoy this episode, there are a ton of other interviews of The Vinyl Guide you may want to check out, including episode 243 with Dave Lombardo, drumming legend of Mr. Bungle, Misfits, and Slayer. Episode 235 with Jay Bentley, talking about the rare records of Bad Religion. Episode 191 with Espen Willems of Monolord, talking vinyl. Episode 158 with Isaiah Mitchell of Earthless. And episode 150 with Neil Sugarman, talking all about Daptone Records. All these episodes and more are available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, don't forget to stick around after the interview to hear the new Here Lies Man track from their album, Ritual Divination, available for pre-order at RidingEasyRex.com. So, without further delay, let's talk to Marcos Garcia.
Hello,
Mr. Marcos. How are you today?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
It's a crazy world out there, man.
It's a crazy world, indeed.
You doing all right?
Yeah, I think so. I it's been a roller coaster, but I think I was actually just catching up with a friend before this call, and he's like, "You sound really calm." I was like, "Yeah, I feel pretty calm. I've already spun out many times." It's like the longer this goes on, it's just like, well, there's no fighting it.
Yeah, you might as well just try to enjoy the ride, I guess. You can't control it.
No, for sure. And I, to be honest, man, I spent so much time on the road that having this time not being on the road has actually been really grounding. It's probably better for my health. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking advantage of it because, I mean, granted, I don't know when we'll be back on the road, but.
So how has the COVID lockdowns impacted you? Here Lies Man and Antibalas. I mean, you make quite a bit of your living off touring. Have you refocused to recording now?
I have, actually. Yeah, I've been working on recording and mixing for other people. I think that's really part of the pivot, is to just kind of focus more on the studio. But truth be told, like, I never made a living from the studio before. So It seems like a lot to ask of, a computer and some gear. But I mean, I'll try, you know. Like I said, I'm just trying to stay open to possibilities and things as they arise. Because It seems like, you know, there's still stuff going on. It's just not on the performance end. So
Do you find yourself more comfortable in the studio, or do you really miss playing live? Is that something you kind of pine for?
Yeah, I miss it for sure. I don't miss the incessant travel. So like I said, that's kind of been like a refreshing aspect of all this. But I do enjoy the studio. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, once I get in the zone, there'll be like 10, 12, 14 hours go by. I'm like, whoa. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it used to be for me before I started working with Jeff on Here Lies Man stuff. Jeff has a family and, you know, he's like the dad that's on calls. So working with him forced me to like approach the studio as like a job, where we'd go in at like 10 or 11 in the morning and then we'd finish at 6.
He's making you stick to a schedule.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was for the first few years. Now it's different, but having that schedule was pretty good, because it was like, oh, work-life balance. Mm-hmm. That's what people mean by that. Because, you know, otherwise I'd just be completely...
Waking up at 2 and...
Yeah, I'd stay up till like 4, 5, 6 in the morning, you know, sleep a few hours and then, you know, get the emails done, the phone calls. And then by like 5 or 6 p.m., I'd be back at it until God knows, you know. Not great. Not the best way to do things.
Well, it's something you got to go with your own rhythms and your own instincts. And some of us are night owls. Some of us like to get up.
I am definitely a night owl, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Once you screw up your circadian rhythm, trying to get it back has been a process. But it's good. I mean, it's working. It is working for me now. So I'm, you know, going to bed early. Getting up early. It's been all right. Yeah.
So this new album, Ritual Divination, am I saying that right? Ritual Divination. How is this different, I guess, reflecting your new cycle, your new rhythm, and everything else that's going on around us? How is this different, and what does this add to the Here Lies Man catalog?
Right. Well, we started recording that last year, so the album doesn't really touch upon this pandemic experience. We did have to finish it, you know, socially distanced and all that stuff, but it wasn't recorded that way. How is it different? Well, I think the main difference is, so like I refer to Afrobeat and that like clave based syncopation as like the math, right? Mm-hmm. So the math is a little different on this record because it doesn't strictly adhere to the clave. We kind of branch out into some more straight ahead rhythms. And as I was writing it over, you know, after the last record, I'm always writing. So it's like when I have, you know, like a critical mass of material, I'm like, okay, I need to stop writing and start arranging and recording. So that's kind of how it went. I was just trying to take in some more mainstream influences. Mm-hmm. You know, rhythmically speaking, I always think of this stuff in terms of rhythm, because the aesthetics are the same. You know, the aesthetics are the thing that I stick with, the detuned organs and, you know, trying to get, I think one of the main differences aesthetically with this record was just, I finally felt like I dialed in the guitar sound that I wanted. I stopped chasing. Well, I never stopped chasing the tone, but that's a lie.
You allowed yourself to be a little bit more satisfied, maybe.
Yeah, I did. And I was happy. I mean, it took, you know, 4 amps at a time to make it happen, but we had the opportunity to do it. Jeff had built out his home studio and it's completely soundproof. So I was able to just crank the shit out of the amps and mix and match the flavors, you know, depending on the song, and get like the big sound that I wanted. And you know, Jeff had these like miking ideas, and I feel like it came out as good as it could have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was it recorded at Jeff's house?
Yeah. Yeah. We did the basic tracking as a band in the room, and then overdubbed the guitars and the vocals and the percussion. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, like with the keyboards, we, I never know whether I want to give away my trade secrets, but you know, the whole part of the aesthetic, as far as the organs are concerned and the electric pianos, is to double track them detuned from each other.
Yeah, it's a stereo wobble, kind of.
Yeah, and so what that does is it creates a psychoacoustic effect when you tune them just like I spend time detuning them from each other just enough as I'm like listening to the overtones and how fast the overtones are going. Like, is this making me crazy? Okay, I don't want to do that all the way. I like dial it back and just find like that sweet spot when things are tuned, you know, cents apart, that gives you that kind of like underwater feeling. It's a psychoacoustic effect. And so I've always recorded this with the idea that it's meant to be listened to with headphones, even though I don't actually know how many people are listening on headphones or if they're just listening on their speakers or what, you know. I know this is a vinyl show, right? Podcast. I only just started buying vinyl and collecting vinyl. I've never been a record collector. I have friends that are, and I'm like, that's crazy. That's crazy.
You're not wrong.
No, but meanwhile, I'm collecting pedals and amps and keyboards and guitars and all this stuff that's like, you know. So I have the collector thing, and I kind of felt like, I don't need to collect anything else. Like, I know how obsessive my friends get with this. Mm-hmm. But then I moved into a new place, during the pandemic, and I'm on my own, and I bought a used turntable, and I got the test pressings for the Here Lies Man record and the Chico Man record, and Riding Easy gave me some catalog vinyl, and I started listening. I'm like, well, once I listened to like the Here Lies Man record, I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe I intend for this to be listened to on vinyl, but I've never listened to it on vinyl until now. Mm-hmm. And then I started listening to the other records I have. I don't have much of a collection yet, so I'm going to ask you for some recommendations for where to go. But once I started listening to it, I was like, holy shit, this is incredible. Okay, now I'm thinking, I need a tube stereo preamp. I need a KT88 power amp. I'm like, dude. And then I called up my friend Caleb, who builds amps and has been working with, you know, he's got his own amp company and he's been working with Hiwatt. I'm like, we need to build a phono power amp and we got to look at preamps and maybe we make an integrated. I'm like already thinking about the design. You know, and I know there's probably tons of stuff out there, but Caleb also makes like the loudest amps, guitar amps ever. Like there's no one I know, and I got my nose up in a lot of amp in the amp world. No one makes a louder amp than Caleb. And I don't know that that's necessarily what people are looking for in vinyl amplification, but man, if you had the right speakers, oof.
Oh yeah,
tear down the house.
I mean, you can put together a system quite cheap. My system, I don't have a tube amplifier. You know, frankly, I can't afford it. I consider myself a collector, but also a hobbyist. Like, you can go really nuts on this.
I know.
Like, like you can with just about, you know, any other hobby, golf even. You know, I've seen
of course.
But I put together a couple of my systems on used, pretty much used gear. Mm-hmm. And it's always, to me, it's the match between the amp and the speakers.
Right.
You know, you have to have the right ohmage. You have to have the right electronics right. between them. And I don't know the science behind it enough to say, you know, to read specs and say right. these speakers would be great for you. These wouldn't. But yeah, I would suggest finding a buddy to help you make those connections. And once you have that sort of setup, that's like a 20-year, you know, done for the next couple decades.
Right. No, I it makes perfect sense. My thought is like, well, what if it were affordable and powerful and running on like, you know, KT88s, which are like hi-fi tubes that are used in typically in bass amps, right? So there's like tons of headroom, super clear, but also warm. I don't know. These are the obsessions, you know.
You may be onto something, you know, but that's, I got to tell you, Marcos, I'm a little concerned that you slipped into that world so quickly and easily.
Yeah, no, I mean, because I immediately drew the, I'm like, this is the merging of amplification and now this newfound love for just the warmth of vinyl. Because it's just like, yeah, with modern
music. And writing easy, those guys are all about, and they will keep they will keep you supplied. That is the
absolutely
that's the purest strain.
And I think it's being fed by, you know, Daniel, and you know, I have this other record coming out on Ubiquity, and those guys are, you know, vinyl heads. So everyone's being like, yeah, do it, I'd be interested. I'm like, okay, I gotta look into this some more.
Well, man, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Have you found your record shop yet? Have you found your...
No, I have not.
You live in LA, yeah?
Yeah, I'm in Highland Park, and Permanent Records just moved down the road. Like, things are still not quite... I mean, they're not quite normal as an understatement. We're getting there, but not quite yet. So I know that there's a new record store that opened up down the street from me I have to check out.
Yeah. Gimme's great. They're nearby.
Okay.
If you get down Costa Mesa, Cream Tangerine, one of my favorite record shops.
Actually, I have been there once. Yep.
Yeah. Whenever I go into LA, it's kind of like I've got about five shops that I like to hit. Freak Beat is really good.
Okay, where's that?
Sherman Oaks.
Okay.
You know, because I live in Australia.
Right. I heard that. I checked out the Robert Trujillo podcast. I got that.
Yeah, and I'll fly into LA because I've got relatives there. I'm from California originally. And before the pandemic, I used to fly in probably once or twice a year. And I'd go to LA and I'd have my five spots to hit up. But what I would also recommend is checking out some of the record fairs in Southern California. There's the Orange County Fair that's in Buena Park. Okay. I think it's, again, this is all, you know, putting COVID aside, right? It's like the last or the first Sunday of every month or the last Sunday of every month. And then there's the Pasadena City College Swap Meet, which has a huge record section in it. And I think that's the first Saturday of every month. So I whenever I'd fly in, I would stay over the week where I got that last Sunday and the first Saturday. I'd get two record fairs in that same week.
Wow. Okay, I'm writing this down. What was the first one you said in Buena Park?
Buena Park, it's the Orange County Record Fair or record show. Yeah, if you Google Orange County Record, Google will fill the rest out.
Awesome. See, you're just adding to it. You're adding to it. So I appreciate the encouragement.
Hey, no worries. No, I look, you know, you're part of the family now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm such a newbie. It's funny to be 46 years old and feel like a newbie kid.
Mm-hmm. So you were mainly cassettes, CDs. How did you get your music as a kid?
Oh, definitely cassettes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My dad owned a record label, so, you know, I was surrounded by LPs and 8-tracks, but you know, when the Walkman came out, that changed everything. So,
okay. What was the label that your dad ran?
He had a few, I guess the longest running, he died in 1986, but he started out, he bought a label called Montilla in the 60s. So he bought a catalog from this guy, and then he started a label called Algar, named it after my grandfather. And it was mostly like merengue, Latin American, Caribbean music, you know. Mm-hmm. He had another label called Four Points. Yeah, and like, it's like basically what he was doing was tapping into what was considered the golden era of merengue in the, you know, kind of late 70s through the 80s. That's really kind of considered the golden era. Mm. They were still big bands, but, you know, they started using synthesizers and, you know, have the traditional kind of like orchestra. These were all orchestras. Mm-hmm. And then there'd be like one or two, you know, the singers would be kind of like, it'd be like Mili y los vecinos. So it'd be like Mili was the feature and her sister sang, you know, co-leads or backups, but she was the face of the band.
Right.
And then they're just, you know, just like, it's pretty, I don't know. It's outside of people that are into that. I mean, I don't even know. Like, as far as Dominican music goes, they're like, you know, royalty of that era, but I think it's pretty obscure everywhere else.
Now, there weren't records around the house? I guess I'm a little bit, you know, surprised that you're only getting into vinyl now, but your dad owned a record label. That's, to me, that's interesting.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, listen, so at one point, because my dad's the distributor and his office was in Hell's Kitchen, right? So we used to spend a lot of time there. I spent a lot of time with just futzing around with cassettes and 8-tracks, and there wasn't much to do at the office. But at one point, our whole garage, we lived in the suburbs in Jersey, and the entire garage was filled with boxes of LPs, and I would make forts out of them. Like I would like climb, I would make like a staircase.
Like couch cushions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I'm when I tell you like the entire garage, there were like thousands and thousands of boxes. Not, I mean, I don't even know how many LPs, but there was many hundreds of boxes that like I could literally create a staircase, and then I made like a little platform on top, and then I could kind of go across. The entire garage was all those boxes of records. So yeah, it is crazy that I never took to it.
You never put one on in its intended use.
No, I mean, I used it as like to play on, you know, to play on top of. It's crazy. It is crazy. And then I would see my friends, you know, DJ friends that have just like walls, you know, the floors sagging. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't do that. And because I got into gear, you know, so.
Yeah.
And like, I have a different relationship with music, with listening to music. To me, it's very difficult to passively listen to music. I'm automatically picking apart the production quality, the arrangement, you know, like everything about it. It's not a passive experience for me.
Does that cause a problem? Does that make you feel uneasy? Like you can't sit down and just enjoy it for the way it was meant to be enjoyed?
Sometimes, yeah. Like I can listen to classical music and I don't. Well, sometimes, you know, I get caught up in the shapes and, you know, sometimes, I guess it just depends. But most of the time, like I was listening to Cocteau Twins last night. I'm like, I'm trying to hang out with my friend and not analyze the guitar sounds, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's a lexicon reverb.
Yeah. And go through like, what kind of chorusing is going on here? Like, why is it doing that? Yeah. I was like, oh shit. And I'm like, oh yeah, this one album was 82. I can't remember the title, but I'm like, oh, this whole record is 808. That was the year the 808 came out. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, it's hard for me not to just pick it apart.
You know, I have the same thing. Like I can hear punch-ins and I'll hear those sort of studio techniques. Sure. And that's why I've started to gravitate in the last probably 10 years towards jazz, especially some of the early jazz around, you know, the Blue Notes around, you know, 60s, because those guys were recording everything in one shot. Mm-hmm. It was just set up and go, and the musicianship is off the charts. So I don't have a frame of reference. I have no other choice but to enjoy it the way it is.
Yeah, no, and that is the beauty of those records for sure. I mean, that's kind of the ideal in terms of, you know, Antiboss has been on Daptone for a long time, and that's kind of the Daptone ideal as well. It's like, you either get to take or you don't get to take.
There's not a lot of post in Daptone. It's kind of almost a one and done sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there might be like the adding of reverbs or whatever kind of extra compression, but most of it you're dialing in before you hit record.
Mm-hmm.
So you either get to take or you don't get to take.
That's interesting. You're part of two really innovative but also retro labels, one that mimics the 60s and one that mimics the 70s.
Yeah.
Is that irony lost on you at all? Or
no, not at all. I see that as the aesthetic, right? And there's like, how do I describe it? Like there's this technician kind of sensibility to it, because in order to dial in the sounds to feel a certain way, there's that whole technical aspect of how you're approaching the sound design of it. And I've always, in my own, you know, my own stuff, and with, I mean, I know Here Lies Man kind of still is going for this other aesthetic, but I try to push a little bit. I push the envelope, try to push the envelope a little bit, mm-hmm. as far as the aesthetic goes, and imagine like what could have been. That's kind of what's dictated anything that I've done as a solo artist or with Here Lies Man. It's like, what would it have sounded like? You know, and then in order to not kind of rub against the aesthetic too much, you know, like if I put synthesizers in Here Lies Man, even though people think they're hearing synthesizers, you're hearing organs, you're hearing electric pianos, you're hearing divide down, things that are period specific.
Right.
What I'm doing is the detuning and adding effects like you would have found in pedals at the time to create those washy textures, you know. Same thing with the guitars. I'm like, I'm pushing it, but I'm still trying to stay with, like, that's always been my MO. It's like, I'll buy gear for a record. Typically there's some kind of window of time in history that I'm imagining. So then I would get period specific things for that. And then, you know, I keep moving along the timeline, and then I sell the gear, buy new, you know, recycle the gear for the next record. Mm-hmm. I mean, at a certain point, though, I had like 50 fucking amps, which I started selling because it was like, okay, this is crazy. I can't even walk in the studio right now.
You're the weird cat lady, but with gear.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a problem. I'm getting better.
Now, you seem to have a very addictive personality. So,
well, it's more obsessive. It's just like, okay, so you're telling me that a trainer amp from Canada can be modded and you get it to sound like a Marshall. Okay. I got to find the trainer.
Mm.
And now, so it's part of it is the hunt. So now I'm looking for a trainer for the cheapest price possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't need a lot of work. Sometimes it needs work.
Mm.
And that's how that it's like a cat and mouse thing. I'm the cat and the amps are the mouse, and I'm just chasing, you know, trying to,
you know what's funny is we just had Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth on the show. He's a massive record collector, and we were talking about collecting, and the subject of the hunt came up, and it really kind of struck me that as humans, we're derived from animals. Most people believe that anyway.
We're animals.
Yeah. But we're not in the wild hunting things anymore.
No.
But it's still in our lizard brain that mm-hmm. that's kind of there. So
absolutely.
Maybe collecting is part of that way that we exercise that muscle.
Yeah, absolutely. If it involves the hunt, then yeah, I totally agree. Because there's like, I mean, just even like something as silly as eBay, it's like the impulse is, it's an ancient impulse to like, get it.
Yeah.
You know, like wait till the perfect moment and then strike. And that's, it's primal. You're right. That's straight from the limbic system.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the moment you get it, you're like, there's a brief period of satisfaction, and then it's on to the next one.
I know. And that's therein lies the issue.
Yeah. So when you are recording something like Here Lies Man, and it sounds like your writing process is you build up riffs, you build up parts, and then you start the organization, the arrangements. Do you have a lot of extra material? Like the tracks that we're getting off of Ritual Divination, is there like twice or three times that was set aside?
No. So there's the LP version and there's the digital version.
Mm.
So because we got 40 minutes to work with, you know, I can, I always end up writing more than 40 minutes. So usually about 60 minutes worth. Mm. When I hit that mark, I'm like, okay, I need to stop because we're not going to put out a double LP. We're not, I'm not doing that. Like this, that's not the move. So then there are extra tracks on the digital and there'll be like, you know, stuff that doesn't make the cut, but that's usually for good reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not quite all there. What I do is I go in the studio or at home and, you know, I start writing, something comes and I see this, I approach this all as like, I'm receiving a transmission. I'm not trying to control or dictate what is happening. Right. So an idea comes and then invariably it's just like, where does this go? And then the hands start moving and exploring. And then here comes the B section. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, where does that go? And then, you know, there might be a C or a D section or, you know, and in an effort to not make it overly heady or, you know, just like unnecessarily complex and just keep it like a direct transmission. That's just like, this is A, B, C, maybe D. Right. Mm-hmm. And whatever I was feeling at the moment, I give it a title. Like whatever the feeling was when I was sitting down doing that, you know, there's a track called like Runaway Children. It's like, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking about, but that was the title that came. So that becomes like a marker for me for later, just to remind me of what the original feeling was. And then any vocal content, of which there's not much, but what there is being guided by that original feeling. So I have these ideas and Jeff and I get together to arrange all of, and I send him the stuff. And then usually the rhythm of what I've written kind of implies a drum rhythm because it's written in in clave. So mm-hmm. Jeff and I get together, we work out the transitions of the parts and then we record that as a demo. Then I'll go back, write the keyboard parts and the vocals are last. And, you know, like I was saying, is keeping in the spirit of like, it's a transmission. I try to write from a transpersonal place. So there's no narrative per se, but when you put together the lyrics of all the songs, you get this much bigger narrative. Mm. And that's across all of the records. So you can take the lyrical content of all the records and it forms this long kind of, you kind of see the journey of this character through like mental disintegration and reintegration and moments of ecstasy followed by moments of paranoia. It's like a giant, I call it the movie.
Right.
And it is really just an expression of these different states that I'm feeling, or that ideally when you're listening, when the listener is checking it out, listening to it, whatever it's evoking for you as the listener is also the movie, because I'm not trying, like my ego is not trying to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of how it works.
So for Ritual Divination, what is the story? What is the arc that our protagonist Marcos goes through?
You know, I'd have to look at the sequence again, but basically there's like this, there's usually like a sense of foreboding and doom. Impending doom, followed by a flight into like through the veil into this like psychedelic space where they're like time and space and ego cease to exist. And then there's kind of like the denouement where it's just like it starts reintegrating, and then it might finish with, it just depends on the record, but on this one the LP is kind of a condensed trip. Mm-hmm. And the digital version is longer, so there's kind of a little more like, you know,
detail. It's the director's cut.
Yeah, there's kind of, yeah, there's more, a couple more twists, you know, where it goes up and down. But generally, there's an, it's, you know, that's the arc, because it like mimics. I'm not saying I use psychedelics, but it mimics that experience. Mm-hmm. You know, from what I understand. people, when you're doing psychedelic, there's this kind of like rush of anticipation followed by like this liftoff, and then you're, you know, ideally piercing the veil and like the loss of ego and the sense of like unity and, you know, a huge capacity for love when your ego is not involved. And then there's like, you have to reintegrate into the world and, you know, not,
not lose the lesson.
Yeah. And yeah, you reintegrate, there's the lesson, and then you're responsible to communicate that lesson to the rest of the world. That experience is identical to what Joseph Campbell describes as the hero's journey. So That's basically what's happening on every record.
And then ends in a trip to Denny's.
Well, maybe no, but yeah, I mean, usually a good long sleep.
And this is a very typical arc, for instance, No Ground to Walk Upon.
Yeah.
The other albums have a very similar kind of, it's very kinetic. It seems the way that you write is you don't try to control it. You let the universe provide and you become a vessel of sorts.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds cheesy, but I mean, there's no other way to explain it because there's like this element of intuiting what needs to happen. But then you're also not trying to control it. You're just letting it arrive. And kinetic, I think, is, you know, you're using the word kinetic. And that is, to me, entirely the source of that is the clave. It's an ancient algorithm. That's what it is. And it's meant to activate your body.
So, Marcos, you've brought up the topic of the clave a couple times, and I'm not entirely sure I know what that means. Can you spend just a moment? Can we explore that? Can you help me understand what the clave is?
So the clave is basically this skeletal architecture of rhythmic architecture that has two sides. So you could look at it really as an algorithm. It's a five pulse rhythm. And depending on how you look at it, there's three pulses at the top on the front and then two at the end, or two at the front and three at the end. But either way, it functions as like a call and response. And all of the instrumentation follows this call and response. So even within one guitar part, it's like kind of fractal in nature, in that I don't want to start singing guitar parts, but if you look at any of the guitar parts, right? There's two sides to it, to the phrase. And even within the one side, there's a call and response. It's just this, it's basically call and response. Mm-hmm. That's the simplest way to put it. I could keep talking about it. To me, it's a spiritual thing because it is fractal and it does adhere to the golden ratio. It's perfectly balanced and it's an ancient formula. Mm-hmm. And all, like most African, especially West African, particularly West African music, is contingent upon the clave. And all of African diasporic music in Cuba, and even in New Orleans, you know, when the Bo Diddley beat is the clave, like literally spelled out gunk, 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 gunk. That is the clave. Mm. It's just being spelled out in Cuban music or in Afrobeat or in African music. It may or may not be being played audibly, but if it's not being played in some fashion, all of the instruments are touching upon those five pulses. And then there's what's called the permutations of the clave. And now we get into, like, to me, what is basically a spiritual exercise that is also mathematic, but you don't need to understand the math, because once you've integrated the clave, it expresses itself. I don't know how else to put it, but to me that's my religion.
And going back to what we were talking about, our lizard brains picking up on these sort of things, you think these things are in us for thousands of years, you're thinking, and playing clave kind of unlocks some of those instinctual connections.
That's the magic of it. Yeah, because it activates your body. Once you start playing rhythms in clave, I don't know, man, something happens. It's hard to explain, but yeah, I think it's a very ancient and primal knowledge that our ancestors were able to tap into. And then you see it travel it through the African diaspora, and then it took new forms in Brazil and Cuba. And then when Cuban music became popular in the United States, then you saw it evolve in New York and in New Orleans and to become other forms. And it's it persists, and it's immutable.
When I listen to Here Lies Man, I mean, the music is very, to me, very trance-like.
That's what the clave induces.
Yeah. Where are you at mentally when you play it?
So when I'm playing it, I am in that trance, ideally. If I'm thinking about it, then we have problems.
Mm. Okay.
Listen, I've been doing it for so long that I can snap into it pretty easily. Not always, you know, depends on, did I get enough sleep? Did I eat? Did I fucking go to the bathroom? You know, like there's just like basic physiological factors that can be impediments. But for the most part, this is something that I snap into because I've been doing it for so long. So, and part of, you know, getting on stage to perform, like one of the early, when I formed the band, recognized it's like the moment we step on the stage, the show has begun. So there's no tuning. There's no making extraneous noises. It's like, it's theater, right? Because if the goal is to induce this trance and I have nothing but reverence for it, you know, then we're here to serve that purpose. And we step on stage and whatever sound is being made or emitting from the amplifiers, it needs to be in the service of, you know, what I call the movie. So it's basically the reverence for and in service of that trance.
Does that same instinctual approach take to the set list as well? Like, you may not know where exactly you're traveling. I mean, some shows may be an hour and a half. Some may go 2 hours, just depending on where you and Jeff are at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's easier to stick to a set that we know works because the arc is built into it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's always room to switch it up.
So for this new album, I believe Ritual Divination is actually out in January.
Yeah.
But the vinyl pre-sale and the announcements and everything are going out October 27th.
That's
according to Daniel anyway.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I know.
Yeah. So okay. I'm glad to have played that role. Do you know much about what the physical packaging is going to be for this album?
Oh man, we found this such a great cover. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, did we agree on what the back cover looks like? I need to call Daniel today. But I mean, it's going to be a single LP. I don't know what the color variants are going to be yet. Mm-hmm. But man, when Jerry showed me the cover, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Because it, have you seen it?
Yes. Yeah. The matches.
Yeah. So the whole idea of this match that's already been consumed, I'm like, because the thing is like, if the cover has to be in integrity with the MO of the band, of the music, you know, and No Ground to Walk Upon, there was one that Jerry found that was just like this mannequin on fire. So the whole idea of being consumed is the motif for me. That's the thing that feels in alignment. And so then when we saw it, when I saw the matchstick, man, I was like, holy shit, this nails it. Nails the feeling, you know? It's just like, we're all here. We're fucking in this world. We come into it a certain way and then it consumes us, you know, and you either revel in that or it just utterly destroys you. And either way, there's a beauty to it because it's true. It's authentic. It's the most human. Right. And that's, you know, man, it really spoke to me.
I could tell.
Yeah.
So you guys, typically when the art comes in, you have someone who gives a few options and one will no doubt resonate more than the others. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Jerry, Daniel's wife, who's like, she's just brilliant with the covers. I love that they take it so seriously, you know, because I've been on labels where it's kind of an afterthought almost, but for them to really see the import of connecting the visual presentation with, you know, the musical content, especially for someone like me, where it's like highly conceptual and it's something that I've reflected on and thought about for years. Mm-hmm. It just feels like we're in alignment.
That Riding Easy Records, I have such high respect for them. The business that they do and the music that they put out and the whole package is there. It's a place that whenever I order a box of records from, I feel really good about it because I know it's going to some good people. It's going, and I know I'm going to get some great music out of it.
Yeah. And it's not some giant corporate profit driven entity. There's this like love for music there.
So in terms of, obviously we've got the pandemic that's still not squashed. We've got a lot of uncertainty in the world. You've got this album coming out. I've been privileged to be able to check it out and I'm really, really enjoying it. What are the plans from this point? The album's going to come out, Antibolus or Here Lies Man. You really can't play live right now. What are you thinking in terms of how this is going to function going into the new year?
I mean, it's just, we're going to do press and talk about it. And, you know, if I can get my shit together and make some videos, not like performance videos, but like more conceptual visual representations of what the emotions are and the states of mind are in the music, mm-hmm. that would be good. But I mean, I don't know. It's like, what can you actually do? There's, you know, maybe there'll be some socially distanced shows here and there, but
we're having those in Australia now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've gone to a few of them now and bands are playing multiple times a night. There'll be like a 6 o'clock show and a 9 o'clock show. And yeah, there's like 50 to 100 people that we all have to kind of,
and these are outdoor, you know,
follow certain rules. No, indoor, totally indoor.
Wow. See, that's the thing. It's like, I keep asking my friends, okay, like, when is the next time you'd be willing to step into a room for 2 hours with like 1,500 people? Nobody's trying to do that anytime soon. There was one person that would be like, tomorrow. And he wasn't even a friend. It was just a guy that I was talking to. And I'm like, you're fucking nuts.
Yeah.
But most people, I think the impact is going to be pretty severe because, you know, depending on a band's following, like demographically, like their age groups, right? It's like our fans are older. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unknown whether or not that can happen again in like as a, where we all make a living from it.
Right.
You know, the younger bands with the young following, they might be fine. And this might be the thinning of the herd. You know, this happens in nature. Mm-hmm. I hate to sound dispassionate about it, but I just want to be realistic. And that's not, I don't mean that in like a doom and gloom kind of way. It's just kind of like, I don't think I would be willing to do that anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Like for a few hundred bucks, like, I don't think so.
A lot of bands are starting to do the live streams.
Yeah.
Is that something that may be in the future for Here Lies Man?
Yeah. Yeah. We might do that. It's just, it's part of, I think, the magic of any live show, but particularly for us is like, when you're playing this music, when the actual sound waves hit your body, mm-hmm. that's how the activation is fully maximized. You know, it's just like the sound waves penetrate the cells of your body. It's like your mitochondria gets activated. You feel like you got to move, mm-hmm. you know? And man, unless you're listening to the live stream through one of these KT-88 integrated stereo amplifiers that I'm dreaming of, like, and it's really loud, you know, because like there is really just, it's like the physical property of sound. It has to like enter your body.
Yeah. You can't get that from a laptop speaker.
Never going to happen. So, you know, it's something that we could do and that I'm sure we will, but it's, you know, we'll see.
Okay. Now, finally, look, Afrobeat is a type of music that I've really only discovered for myself in probably the last 10 years or so. Bands like the Doctaris that have really, you know, opened my eyes and ears. Who else should I be seeking out?
I mean, the progenitor of the music is Fela.
Mm-hmm. Fela Kuti.
Fela Kuti, yeah.
To my Western indoctrinated ears, what do you think is a good entry point or two to the Fela Kuti catalog?
I would say like one of the biggest hits that he had was Zombie. Mm-hmm. That record is fantastic. Gentleman, you know, so much of what he's talking about on those records is entirely relevant today. Mm-hmm. With Black Lives Matter and the like movement for racial justice and equity. Like he was talking about that 40 years ago in a really poignant way because he was the subject of governmental persecution, his protest artist, you know? And so much of what he talks about is just entirely relevant, you know? And then there's the bands that just what was happening at that time. Like Tony Allen came out with some records. He was Fela's drummer. Man, there's so many compilations out there too. I love the Funkees because they were experimenting with Afrobeat and rock and funk. And it's Funkees. And then you have bands from Benin like Orchestra Polyritmo, which had a much wider palette than just Afrobeat in the Fela style. Mm-hmm. And their early records are just, man, they were so experimental. And have you heard Orchestra Polyritmo?
No, I have not.
Man, oh, that's like...
Writing it down.
Next to Fela, Orchestra Polyritmo de Continu. So DeConinou.
Okay.
From Benin. I mean, that... Between Fela, the Funkees, and Orchestra Polyritmo... Therein lies the inspiration for Here Lies Man, along with Black Sabbath.
And Tony Iommi is.
Yeah, Tony Iommi. It's not obvious. It's not obvious if you don't know, you know, the African music, but like having been steeped in the West African music, going back and listening to Tony, I'm like, dude, all you got to do is switch up the rhythms. It's doing the same thing. It's and that's the beauty of music, right? It's just like it transcends time and space. It transcends cultures. It transcends language, you know? Because like Tony was intuiting something, right? And rock and roll is inherently African, right? So there was something transmitted that he may or may not have been aware of that was diasporic at its core. And so his rhythmic response in writing his riffs is an expression of that, which, yeah, it's just like, to me, it seems pretty clear. And I think it's really just because I spend so much time with diasporic music that then I can, you know, you start hearing its genetic cousins and relatives in what's considered non-African music, which is rock and roll, but it's in rock and roll. It's there. You're just either aware of it or not. But that's the beauty of the clave and the permutations of it is that it basically creates a response in the human being, a rhythmic response that people may or may not be aware of the origin of it. That's why I say it's my religion, because like that works in mysterious ways and it's so powerful and it's undeniable and it's immutable.
That's beautiful. I like how you've analyzed and considered this quite a bit. I'm going to assume that not many West African records made it to Birmingham in the late 60s.
You never know, though. I mean, not to say that he may or may not have listened to that stuff, but, you know, I remember there was a Colombian, years ago, I heard there was a Colombian band from the 70s. Like a cumbia kind of like carnival band playing a cover of Fela. I'm like, how the fuck would they have gotten their hands on a Nigerian record and then done a cover of a Fela song at a time when he wasn't like outside of Africa. He was this like firebrand, but like rare kind of bird, you know, it was like a novelty or something for Western audiences.
It's like a radio transmitter.
Yeah.
If you've got your antenna up to a particular frequency,
you can capture it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Marcos, for coming on the show. Our antennas are are up and aligned and waiting for the new Here Lies Man album, Ritual Divination. It's out in January, but it's available for pre-order in late October at writingeasyrex.com. And you want to get there quick because Writing Easy always has these special pressings. They're limited numbers. Some of them are hand-poured. They're artistic. They're really quite interesting. So get in there quick if you can, writingeasyrex.com, and grab a copy of Here Lies Man, Ritual Divination. Of course, there are several other Here Lies Man albums. You Will Know Nothing, No Ground to Walk Upon. They're all great. Plus, there's a lot of other great artists over there at writingeasyrex.com. Feel free to explore. I tend to also like Blackwater Holy Light, Bus is fun, Spelljammer. There's several other artists up there. So just grab a bunch of records while you're writing Easy Rex, especially one of the Here Lies Man Ritual Divination records. And again, Marcos, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide, and we hope to see you guys out on the road soon.
Thank you so much, Nate. Have a good day.
You too, man. Cheers.
Oh, there we go. That's the burner right there. The new Here Lies Man track from the album Ritual Divination. That track's called I Told You, You Shall Die. Oh, man, the rest of the album is fantastic. You got to check it out for yourself, and you can by pre-ordering now over at RidingEasyRex.com. Here are what the first pressing vinyl variants will be. 100 units of a clear high melt orange yellow red, 100 units white high melt orange yellow red, 300 black, 300 white, 300 opaque light blue, and 500 opaque yellow. Not that many records on the first pressing, so you better get in quick. Check out RidingEasyRex.com. Pre-order a copy of Ritual Divination and also check out some of the other Here Lies Man albums. You Will Know Nothing, No Ground to Walk Upon. Of course, they've got their self-titled as well. And other bands, The Death Wheelers, Blackwater, Holy Light, Acid King, Bus, a whole bunch of bands up there at RidingEasyRex.com that are just what your turntable ordered. That's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share this episode on your socials, Facebook, Instagram, tweet it out on Twitter. In fact, you can leave us a positive review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get the podcast. That would be fantastic. Log in, give us 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10. Say something nice and we will be forever in your debt. So we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.